KJNU program that provides you with content related to queer communities in Colorado. I'm your host, Elise Matatal, and last week I had the honor of interviewing Kaylin Heffernan. Kaylin is a Denver artist, activist, educator, and former Denver mayoral candidate. Thank you so much for meeting with me again. Do you want to introduce yourself briefly? Name, pronouns, maybe some of the hats you've been wearing recently?
Yeah.
Although the listeners can't see your current hat, which is very cool.
Oh, yeah, I'm Kaylin Heffernan, Kaylin Rose Heffernan, to be exact, from Wheelchair Sports Camp. She, her, they, them, he, boy is fine. All pronouns is fine. Wear my top hat. I think it's a porker hat, I think they call them. Pork pie. That's it. And yeah, happy to be here.
Nice. So you're the MC for Wheelchair Sports Camp?
I'm the rapper. I'm the wheelchair of the Wheelchair Sports Camp. And I'm the El Chapo and the manager and all the other behind the scenes titles.
Nice. I am curious, where did the name Wheelchair Sports Camp come from?
Yeah, there's an actual wheelchair sports camp here in town called the Colorado Junior Wheelchair Sports Camp. And now that I have a Google alert on wheelchair sports camp, I get hella things about wheelchair sports camps across the country. And from my understanding, we're the only all free wheelchair sports camp that I attended as a child and corrupted as a child and was too cool for it, and I would bring all my able-bodied friends and to volunteer, and we would really just like go and ditch and, you know, go do what we want and get in trouble. And so that's where it came from. And then once I became a teenager and started driving, I started volunteering, so I wasn't getting in as much trouble there, and I still got a lot of I still love everybody there and get to go and say hi every year, and they're pretty much okay with me using their name.
So you were the hooligan who then got reformed?
That's right. Yeah. I was like the hooligan, but also like we still love each other, you know, and never got like sour. It's just like, oh, Kaylin and her stupid friends.
It seems like you are pretty involved with politics, activism, just community in Denver. And I wonder what it's been like to watch Denver sort of grow and change and ways that you've, I don't know, tried to maintain some sense of hope or connectedness throughout all the changes.
Yeah, it's tough. And traveling and touring has given me also like a greater perspective. I think Denver is kind of like this vortex and this like magnet of weirdos and creative folks and radical ideas and also like massacres from the beginning of time. And so like it's always had this really strange like pulse for me and like attraction that I'm still like struggling to articulate, but I've always felt it. And like coming up as a rapper, you know, I'd write plenty of raps about like 303 and we're the coolest and da da da. Now I'm like writing raps like don't come here and gentrify our city. But after traveling, it's made me realize that like I'm not making it up, and Denver is a very special place, and we're a very interesting place when it comes to a lot of like movements. So yeah, I feel like my Native American friend is always telling me how like we're a test city, or like we're a test site, and I can see that in a lot of things. And as far as like the current state of recolonization that we're seeing, and it's not new, and the more that I learn about, you know, the history of this occupied land, things make a lot more sense. And but in comparison to the rest of the country, we are kind of one of the test cities for this new like housing model of Chipotle houses. And you know, I don't know. We're up there in the country, but it's happening everywhere. It's really happening everywhere. I mean, even Tijuana is like getting gentrified. So it's like, it's good for me to like get out of Denver, because I am so Denver and I get so like in this bubble of politics of and the politics, not just of politics, but the music politics, the politics in the nonprofit, the politics in everything. Denver is this bubble, and because we're landlocked, it's really easy to get like stuck here, and it does pull us to be stuck here. So traveling gives me like a better perspective of like, okay, it's not just Denver, but Denver is one of those big test cities that things happen here first and the rest kind of follow suit.
For sure. Well, and it's important to be like rooted in our local politics, but also have the perspective that it's not just where we are.
Right.
So speaking of like firsts, I think I read that you were the first like openly queer disabled mayoral candidate in the country. Sure. So tell me about how that came about. I wasn't clear. Was it an April Fool's joke that you got then like pulled into? So in 2019, you sat for mayor.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I rolled for mayor. I sat for mayor. I was an April Fool's test of like, it worked. I wanted that. Is this happening? Is this not? And I was, the whole campaign was our imitating life. Like even though I was like making these sarcastic videos, it was actually what was happening in my head and my heart. Is like, can I do this? Are y'all gotta be crazy? It happened on the way back from a short little trip to New Mexico playing music, and the bully boys in my band bullied me into it. And by the time I got back home, it was like a 8 to 10 hour road trip. That day, I took two naps, and they had already figured out exactly like what I needed to do, and I had started filing. And well, no, they didn't start filing, but they knew that like you only need 300 signatures to get on the ballot. And that was like, oh shoot.
And they're like, I can do that.
Yeah, but then, you know, spiritually and like on a heart level, it was like, there's no way. Like, I've never wanted to be a politician, you know, but I do love performance art, and I do love giving politicians hell for their BS. And they were kind of like, you're already doing all this work, you know, like, you might as well. And it is like this kind of funny role of like, it's almost like the celebrity role of politics. So, yeah, I put a mustache on my face, and what I didn't realize was that because I announced on April Fool's Day, and because I'm a press whore and leaked it to the paper, I only had 10 days to file for real because I announced it. So that was not, I thought I could like throw it into the ether and kind of like have fun with it and see where it goes. But it was like, no, I had a week to like really make the move. And it was probably the stupidest thing I've ever done. It was the worst prank I've ever played on myself. It was like a whole year plus of, it felt like grad school, honestly. I've not been to grad school, but it was, yeah, I'm still tired. And hungover from all of it. It, like, there was just no way I could be everywhere at the same time. And I was still teaching 5 days a week, and I was still riding the bus, public transit. Like, it was a lot. But I'm glad I'm super happy and like proud of it. And we did what we wanted to do. But yeah, it was a lot. And the other thing that got me into it was like, people have always joke that, like, I am the mayor, because, like, I've already been very recognizable just as a very visibly disabled foul mouth. So that's before I started rapping, you know, people would recognize me very easily. And then I started rapping, and then it started going to every protest. And then, you know, if I go somewhere, like, I usually know people. So that was the other joke of it, was that, like, I'm already the mayor, you know.
For sure. The people's mayor.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, so it seems like you have learned a lot about the political process, but you've also been involved in, like, direct action, politics, activism in general. I am thinking about your iconic sit-in and arrest at Cory Gardner's office. Do you want to maybe talk about how you got involved in that action and anything that came from it?
Yeah, I've always been a sucker for direct action and, like, mass mobilization, especially after 9/11 and, like, being in high school, and just that really radicalized me. I mean, I was already, like, pretty intrigued by the civil rights movement and started going to the marades by myself in middle school, but 9/11 really, like, came crumbling on me that, you know, everything was a lie and the real history, and I've been eating all this BS about what America is, you know. And so I've romanticized revolution for a really long time, and the older I got, the more involved I got in different actions. And then, you know, having a band or, like, playing music, it was really easy for me to offer, like, our sets as, you know, during rallies and benefits. Played a lot of benefits, early wheelchair sports camp, like, every, you know, radical group that needed us to play, I would say yes. And so that got me real involved in the Denver activist, you know, efforts. And then it got me to teach at Youth on Record. And then I was kind of in this really, like, weird, crappy time of my life. It was, like, the end of my Saturn return. And I was going to all these protests like I have done my whole life. And Black Lives Matter was really popping off. And I started being more aware of how left out disability was. And I'm very used to being the only, like, visibly disabled person at all these marches and at all these protests. And that was just, like, normal for me. You know, I was at Occupy a lot, and it was just kind of, like, normalized to me. And then intersectionality got a lot more popular, and, you know, it was getting more common to get on the bullhorn and kind of start listing, like, these intersecting marginalized communities, and disability was hardly ever included. I was at a march specifically. I went to rap on the steps for an action, and we took a little march from there. And the whole march of, like, 25, it wasn't a big march, but they started marching up the steps and, like, left me behind at the bottom. And I'm, like, at the bottom wearing my Black Lives Matter shirt, my Protect Trans Lives, and I'm like, huh. And they kind of realized it and came back down and got on the bullhorn, and it was the same thing. It was, like, talking about every marginalized community except disabled. And I had a hard time, like, jumping in, because Oppression Olympics is awful and a trap, you know. And so I went home and I cried a lot, and I was, like, really mad at everybody. But then I realized, like, well, what actions have you gone to for disability? And, like, who's your disability crew? And, you know, then I started, like, having to unpack all my ableism within activism, you know, and I knew all this stuff. I knew all this history, and I had no idea about disability history. And so I kind of had to, like, go inward for a minute, and it just, like, it happened right around the time that I got the call to do Cory Gardner's sit-in. I had seen, like, a Facebook post or something, and I wrote, and I had been trying to hit up ADAPT for, like, years. They actually protested me in Austin because I played an inaccessible show. So, like, me and ADAPT have been, like, loosely on the sidelines of each other, and I had been trying to reach out to the local chapter and never heard anything, and I even wore, like, an ADAPT hoodie on the cover of our CD. But I saw this little thing, and I was like, hey, let me know what's going on tomorrow. And she called me, Dawn Russell called me, and was like, can you get arrested? And I was like, yep. And which is wild, because I'd been to all these actions where people get arrested kind of, like, as a badge of honor, and I never felt good about that. Like, when I went to Standing Rock and stuff, it was like, I want to use my body for something that's useful. Like, and if getting arrested is the most useful my body can be, then I'm down. But it's not a badge of honor either, you know? And so for some reason, when she said it, I was like, yeah, down. And I called and got my classes covered. And we sat inside the senator's office for 3 days, like almost 90 hours, and got arrested. And it was, like, the coolest, like, that's, I swear, that weekend is week, whatever days of the week we were there, that's when my, like, Saturn return ended, and, like, my stars started aligning again, and I felt grounded, and I felt stable, and I felt like me again, and I was able to get this, like, really authentic lens of Denver's role in disability rights and disability injustice from an authentic, like, relationship with all these badass women who have been doing it for my whole life. So it was the coolest alignment ever, best, most important action I've ever been part of. And it worked, you know, and it was also cool to have me as, like, you know, I was, like, new blood to the disability crew, but I was, like, old blood to, like, the rapper, weirdo, artist, activist crew, you know, Occupy Denver weirdos, you know? So, like, it was a cool collaboration, and I had all these press contacts because of my band, and so, like, it really was effective, and it worked, obviously, and Cory Gardner doesn't have a job anymore, and I got to write a diss track about him, and yeah, it was dope. It was dope, and I learned so much, and I'm still in relationship with that scene and that crew, and you know, unfortunately, two people that we were in there with have passed away since, and I'm still learning. I'm still learning, like, so much. Especially, like, right now, I'm building a permanent installation in Meow Wolf that is very inspired by the early disability advocates and activists here in town. So I've been, like, it's heavy on my heart and spirit right now.
Rise and shine, you made it. The blanket weighs a ton. What a time to be alive. Make it look like fun. Will you ever find purpose to this and hang old mate with old on the surface? First thoughts in the morning, last thoughts of the night. Though I fought every fight, lost myself in your love. Now I'm lost in importance. Toss to the right, you draw me crazy. Cross the country with the munchies. Wasted all my wishes on you. Every shooting star I see's got me wondering, is this
joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU Boulder, Denver. I'm your host, Elise Matital, and I'm talking with Kaylin Heffernan, local Denver artist, activist, and educator. She was also the first openly queer disabled mayoral candidate in Denver. Yeah, do you want to maybe for listeners who don't know about the history of ADAPT or even like how Denver has been this site of activism, especially around disability justice, do you want to give a little backstory?
Sure. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's something that I didn't know until then, which is wild because I ride the bus like since ever. And I have been on the like Colfax and Broadway intersection is a very important intersection because it's where disability advocates laid their bodies and wheelchairs in front of the bus demanding they be accessible. And we're the first in the country that did it. And we did it 12 years before even the ADA. And I'd been to Colfax and Broadway, I don't know, a billion times and like had no clue. So I'm happy to share it, the information, because I'm sad that I didn't get this information until so much older. But basically in the late 70s, everybody with disabilities, significant disabilities, were mostly institutionalized and put in nursing homes and care facilities that were not about caring for individuals, that were really like scummy places and terrible food. I mean, you know, an institution, a prison, kind of out of sight, out of mind. And after like MLK and Malcolm X got assassinated, there was a civil rights leader named Wade Blank who was kind of done and like needed to switch it up. And he saw a posting for a youth counselor at a nursing home. And he took the job, and it was here in Lakewood, the Heritage House, and it was a nursing home. And, you know, he was in there like taking everybody to concerts and bringing parties to the spot and taking them to see the Grateful Dead and probably giving a mass. I don't really know, but he was cool. And he had this background in civil rights. And a lot of the disability activists at the time were mentored by the civil rights crew. And so there was a lot of collaboration. And the food was like had maggots, like the nursing home was taking everybody's like disability checks. I mean, it was like terrible living situation. And some of these people were like in their 20s, you know, and like there was a poet named Mike that was like his best bud. And he's like, you should not live here. So they broke him out of the nursing home and like sued the state to pay for their care outside of a nursing home, which is actually cheaper and way more like it's a more human approach, you know, to let people live where they want to live. And they won, so they started Atlantis. They got a couple apartments in Sun Valley, and basically all the nurses and care attendants that got fired from Heritage House in Lakewood were volunteering around the clock to kind of help these new residents in their own apartments. And it became the second independent living center in the country. Once they had their own apartments, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't go to appointments. They couldn't go grocery shopping because transportation isn't accessible. So they started protesting, and Wade Blank from the civil rights crew knew that like using your body and like these direct actions work. And you know, they kind of put the two and two together. They're like, nobody's going to want to see all these disabled people getting arrested. Like, this is going to make the news. And so, yeah, they sat in front of the RTD on Colfax and Broadway shortly after they had their apartments, and they forced RTD to be accessible, and then it became ADAPT. So ADAPT was like the protest crew, where Atlantis was like the independent living center. And, you know, for funding reasons, like, they couldn't be the same. And then ADAPT started happening all across the country. There were disabled folks all over the country doing the same type of direct action where they were like putting their chairs in front of the buses and, you know, all this stuff. So Carrie Ann Lucas, who was in the sit-in with me, who passed away, she was, she made it so that disabled people could adopt, in general, but also like other significantly disabled children. So like, yeah, Denver's got got all this radical history, you know, and Denver's like the heart of one of the epicenters of the Chicano movement, you know, like the Native American resistance here is still super strong.
It's so cool to hear the history, to like know that there is like ancestry around this, that like folks have been doing this for a long time. And I think you alluded to both in your own life and activism, but also like, was it Wade Blank?
Mm-hmm.
That there's like this cross-pollination with different movements, and that you can root in your political home and like learn about your own issues, but then those tactics, like all the tactics that we learned in Occupy, are now being used in like the Black Lives Matter movement now, which is just so cool to see that thread continued. Switching gears a little bit, I heard some queer astrology maybe being alluded to. So I'm curious about, I saw that you contributed to the book that My Ex-Girlfriend's Ex-Girlfriend is My Girlfriend. How did you get involved in that?
You know, I don't know. I guess I'm just so gay on the internet. They just like found me. Maddie Court, I'm not really sure how she found me, but she asked me to be a guest contributor. Maybe it's through Kelsey Whipple, who illustrated the book. She had actually illustrated me for an article when I was rolling for mayor in Them magazine. It's a zine, a Q&A zine that she published into a book, and some of the questions that she got felt a little bit out of her like expertise and wheelhouse. And so there was a question in particular that came from a fairly newly disabled queer in London about relationships and kind of figuring out this new ableist world from a disabled body and my perspective on it. So got to flex my writing skills, which I hadn't done since college. I haven't written that many words since college. And it was cool. It was my first time writing like so personally outside of like my emo gay raps, you know. It was a challenge. It was a flex for sure. But I was all grateful to have like a queer disabled girlfriend at the time, and now that's my ex-girlfriend. So it's like very fitting. It's all very fitting.
Oh, it's like we're such a cliche.
Yeah, it is such a cliche.
Well, in the last like 30 seconds, is there anything you want to share with our listeners about projects you're excited about?
We wrote a musical for Alice in Wonderland with Family, which is the first all disability theater group for the past 30 years. It's their first original. It's their first musical like with original music. So that's exciting. It's going to happen at Sioux Teatro come in August. And yeah, Meow Wolf is going to open hopefully by the fall. And there's a wheelchair space kitchen that you're going to have to find that we built, and it's permanent. I don't know if anything's permanent, but they say it's permanent.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver. I'm Elise Matatal, and I've been speaking with Kaylin Heffernan. You also heard a clip of her band, Wheelchair Sports Camp, and their new single, Yes, I'm a Mess. For more information about Kaylin Heffernan and some of the rad groups she referenced, you can visit news.kgnu.org and click on Outsources under the Shows and Features tab. As always, let us know if you have comments about today's show by emailing outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday, at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of Outsources, providing you homegrown queer radio every week. That's Monday, 6:30 p.m. right here on KGNU, or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.